Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming along to the talk today. So I'm going to give you a whistle-stop tour through what happens to the human body in space. Unfortunately, there's not time today to talk about everything, but hopefully I can point out some of the main things for you. So I'll just set the context a bit and then talk about the responses of the major body systems, talk about what happens if we're unprotected in space, and then just identify some of the other things that we might talk about, and fortunately some of them will be mentioned by other presenters today. So we're born and grow up under the influence of gravity, and that's the same for anybody in proximity to a larger mass. Once you move into low Earth orbit, we're probably all familiar with the concept of free fall of bodies in orbit around the Earth, and that includes the International Space Station. So in free fall, you're effectively in a state of microgravity. And of course, the further that you move away from the Earth, the forces of gravity diminish rapidly. There are three things that we absolutely can't adapt to. One is lack of oxygen. The next is the lack of barometric pressure, which is usually provided by the atmosphere around us, and we don't do too well when we're exposed to radiation. However, we are able to adapt to microgravity conditions, and there are both short-term and long-term adaptations. Starting with the cardiovascular system, one of the most significant things is what's called orthostatic hypotension when astronauts come back to Earth. We're probably all familiar with the idea of feeling faint when we stand up rapidly and perhaps we haven't had enough to eat. So it's a similar sort of thing, and astronauts have trouble staying upright. They might feel dizzy or nauseous, and they might need actually to be helped around after they return to Earth. And that could also be an issue when people are going to Mars, as there's 4/10 of Earth gravity on Mars. So why does this happen? It's a little bit complicated, but basically it's because the circuit of blood around our body becomes depressurized because of the lack of the forces of gravity, and so the receptors in our head which sense the pressure inside these circuits readjust to the lower pressure, and they're no longer used to the force of gravity. However, it's interesting that the actual systolic and diastolic blood pressure, the pressure when the heart is pumping out blood and when it's relaxed, actually goes up as a result of more centralised pooling of blood, and the heart becomes a little bit more inefficient in its pumping. One of the most characteristic things is that astronauts develop what's called puffy faces and chicken legs. So they get a lot of fluid collecting in the upper half of the body, particularly in the face, so they develop a very round face. They get a more flushed appearance because of more blood in the head and a congested nose. And then at the other end of the body, the lower extremities, the legs, become significantly thinner. And as a result of this fluid shifting from the lower half of the body to the top half of the body, the receptors in our head that I was talking about earlier actually sense that we have too much volume on board and that we should get rid of some of it, so there's quite a significant loss of fluid as a result of diuresis or urination, and this actually results in a relative hypovolemia. The heart itself, there are a number of changes. It reduces the amount of blood that it's pumping out with each beat and its total cardiac output, but generally maintains around the same heart rate. But the heart itself becomes smaller and weaker as it doesn't have to work as hard. And interestingly, in microgravity, all of the organs inside the body can float around a bit if they're not firmly anatomically tethered. As far as the composition of our blood goes, it becomes more anemic than usual. Along with the excess of blood volume, the body senses that there's actually an excess of red and white cells, so it gets rid of some of them by reducing production. And it's also a little bit harder to stop bleeding because you don't have the force of gravity pulling down on the blood vessels. There's some good news for the respiratory system. Despite the diaphragm moving upwards, a couple of rib spaces, there's actually an overall improvement in respiratory function. And down the bottom there, there's a picture of astronauts carrying out pulmonary function tests inside the space shuttle. Another thing which is potentially good is that astronauts get a little bit taller in space, and that the discs between the vertebrae and our spine aren't squashed the same way that they are in gravity, so they can expand and the spine lengthens a bit, but some people do experience back pain as a result of this. One of the most concerning things is the loss of bone mineral density, as microgravity brings changes which lead destruction of bone to dominate over formation of bone. So there's a net loss of calcium, and this loss occurs at 1 to 2% per month. And this continues for the entire duration of the time astronauts spend in microgravity. So you can imagine on a trip to Mars, that could be quite a significant loss. And even though some of that bone density can subsequently be restored in a gravitational environment, there's still a risk of osteoporosis and fractures. On the bad news side, there's also loss of skeletal muscle mass and strength, and loss of aerobic fitness and exercise capacity, which actually occurs quite quickly. Your posture also changes in space. This picture here is the typical posture that you'll see when astronauts are floating around. So they're very relaxed and slightly bent forward, and it's the kind of posture that you might see in a baby as well. It's a very natural, neutral posture. As far as musculoskeletal issues go, there's also potential from injury, working outside the spacecraft, working with heavy equipment for long periods and getting fatigued, and also in microgravity, unless something stops you, you tend to keep moving, so there's a risk of other things bumping into you or you bumping into the other side of the spacecraft if you push out too hard. And it's also postulated that healing of muscle and bone is decreased or takes longer in the microgravity environment. And once you come back to gravitational field, as I mentioned earlier, there are issues as a result of the deficits in muscle function and issues with coordination, and astronauts have difficulty operating equipment once they're struggling against gravity again. As far as the gut goes, the diaphragm rises up and your tummy becomes more rounded. The bowel tends to float around in the abdomen. When you first arrive in space, the peristaltic function of the bowel that moves food through the bowel can slow down or disappear completely, temporarily, along with bowel sounds. And that can be associated with space sickness. And there are also issues around potential problems with changed ability to absorb nutrients and becoming malabsorbed or malnutrition, depending on the availability of food on the spacecraft. There will inevitably be changes in gut microbiota, which could also influence your health, and astronauts can get both constipation and diarrhea. Spatial orientation is also quite a challenge in the microgravity environment. In the Earth, we have our eyes and ears and the senses in our muscles to help tell us where we are in space. And in space, the semicircular canals in the inner ear don't work as they were designed to anymore because of the absence of gravity. So they can no longer tell us whether whether we're up or down, and we actually get confused between what we see, what our eyes are telling us, and what the sort of balance senses are telling us because of the absence of the ability of the inner ear to help us. And this tends to be one of the major contributing factors to space sickness, which is really another form of motion sickness with the types of symptoms you're probably all familiar with, and that can last for 2 to 3 days in space. With your eyes, they can be influenced by the increased fluid in the head, and you can develop blurred vision after a few months. Also, there'll be flashes in the eye from cosmic radiation. Hearing is also potentially damaged from the high levels of noise inside the spacecraft, and they can also have impact on your ability to concentrate and work and sleep. And with the nasal congestion, there's a reduction in the sense of smell and also taste. So astronauts report that they need stronger tasting foods in order to be able to enjoy them. As you can imagine, there's also a lot of stress. So the stress response hormonal system often gets activated with increased cortisol, which can have negative effects in terms of muscle breakdown and increased inflammatory markers. And that can also affect our immune system adversely and increase susceptibility to illness. And there are changes in several other key hormones as well. Immune system function decreases. This has been shown in both the space environment and the analog environment. And astronauts' immune system starts getting stressed before they actually even get to space. And so they commonly will develop infections prior to flight travel. And once they're in space, it's very common for viruses like herpes and Epstein-Barr, which is the glandular fever virus, to be reactivated. You also get changes in your skin. Your face gets quite oily, probably related to the increase of fluid in the upper part of the body, despite the drying artificial atmosphere, which could influence the rest of your skin. Cuts take a little bit longer to heal, so they might need a little bit more attention than normal. And this is something that's not talked about a lot, but there is quite a smaller opportunity for normal hygiene when you're somewhere like the International Space Station than when you're in your nice comfy home on Earth. So clothing gets changed less frequently, and they actually have to put antibacterial agents in it. And people have commented on the sort of locker room smell when the hatch to the International Space Station gets opened. And one astronaut told me that your clothing actually floats around you, so you don't have the normal sensation of weight of the clothing. And when you return to Earth and that sensation comes back, it can actually be a little bit unpleasant for a little while until you get used to it again. Moving on to our kidneys, as I mentioned earlier, they're the key organ that helps to get rid of this perceived excess of fluid early in the mission. And a combination of that hypovolemic or dehydrated state together with the raised levels of calcium in the blood can contribute to formation of kidney stones. And there are also other effects. Pressure in the bladder can change, and people can have more difficulty actually starting urination. In terms of reproductive system, this is something that's often not talked about too much as well, but with women you can have a negative effect of a lot of stress and excess exercise on whether they continue to have a menstrual cycle or not, and the levels of production of estrogen. And with men, they've found reduced levels of testosterone and sperm production. And exposure to radiation can have a number of effects on the cells which are actually crucial in terms of reproduction. It can destroy the eggs in women, it can reduce sperm production in men, and certainly genetic mutations as a result of radiation can be passed on to offspring. And if you have large doses, sterility or infertility can result. Dental health is something which often forgotten in terms of thinking about healthcare, but anyone who's ever had a toothache will know that it can be a very painful and unpleasant thing to manage. So particularly with the changes in diet, there's probably a real risk of tooth and gum disease, so that's something that people will need to be very vigilant about. And the picture down the bottom is of a dental examination in space, and the astronaut's actually rotated himself upside down. He didn't actually need the dental chair. So finally, I'd just like to talk a little bit about what happens if you're exposed to space without any protection. So I'm glad to say it's not like in Hollywood movies. You're not going to explode and make a huge mess everywhere, because we're lucky enough to have our skin to keep everything in place, and the body will continue to regulate its blood pressure until you go into shock from lack of oxygen. The air in your lungs will expand because there's no longer any pressure around them, so you need to breathe out, otherwise your lungs might rupture. You can also get the nitrogen coming out of your blood and forming bubbles, so you can get a bit more puffy or get decompression sickness. Any surface water, for instance on your tongue or eyes, might start to boil off. And you could get both hypothermia, because it's really cold in space, and sunburn from cosmic radiation. You'd rapidly lose consciousness, probably about 15 seconds, and unfortunately you'd be dead in about 2 minutes if no one came to rescue you. So there are quite a few other things that we could talk about: the psychological aspects of being in space, the actual environment itself, things we can do to help, and how we actually look after people in space. But unfortunately, we don't have time for that today. So thank you.